protege Pat Scott was being developed within the station while I was the unpaid steward. So I began to look at the need. I've been looking 20 years now at the problem. There's a class, an artificial class distinction between the unpaid and the paid, and we developed two seats on the program council, but that turned out to be tokenism. I see now happening at the station that the new constituted program council, the power for programming has been moved from that program council now to an editorial board, so it's still not democratically reached. I think there needs to be checks and balances to protect the four constituents, listeners, unpaid,
You're listening
paid,
to
and
a
management.
Live broadcast
and
of the Interim Pacifica National Board meeting in Berkeley, California. A living broadcast on KPFA in Berkeley, KPFB in Berkeley, KFCF in Fresno, as well as WBAI in New York City and KPFK in Los Angeles. And on the web, WBIX.org, KPFX.org, and Radio for Houston, as well as the Indy Media Center in Washington, D.C. We are having station reports right now. We're listening to the station report on KPFA FM and receiving a public comment coming up. Next will be the report from KPFA.
We need the women's department back. We need the third world department back. Women die all the time from domestic violence. We still don't have an ERA. And we need production training for women and youth of color so we can do the remotes that Willie is talking about and in-studio engineers. Are we at 2 minutes yet?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, John.
Hi, my name is John Page. On July 12th, Drama and Literature Department at KPFA is going to air a documentary on Camp KPFA, which was used as a blunt instrument to make Pacifica back up, the 1999 Pacifica, and let our programmers back into the building. At Camp KPFA, the backbone of the camp were local homeless people. After we got into the station, and after we had won that temporary tactical victory, the homeless continued their encampment in our parking lot for a while, and they had two demands. One was an end to harassment by the police of Berkeley, and the other was a plot of ground somewhere in Berkeley where they could have an encampment with running water and toilets. No heat, no light, just running water and toilets and a place. We have never paid them back. We owe a debt to the homeless people of Berkeley. They have not been on our air. We have not talked about them. We have not talked with them. We have not heard their voices on the air. We have a debt to pay to them. Even without the debt, we should listen to them. The homeless far outnumber us in this room. If KPFA is part of a broadcast commons, which I think it is and must be protected as such, then who are we, a minority, to keep the voices of a greater number of people off of our airwaves? We have to open our hearts and our minds and let the homeless speak. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we have Gail, then Signe, and then Mary Bird. Gail, Signe, Mary Bird.
Hi, I'm Gail Blasey. I'm from the Sacramento Listening Area, and I'm also an elected local advisory board member. I'm very, very excited about the new programming that I've been hearing. Last night, Mariah Gallardon produced this excellent programmer showcase. It was very exciting. I get very excited hearing other people from other stations. I love it. It makes me feel like I have a bigger community out there. I'm also very, very impressed and excited by the work that Don Foster is doing and Neil McLean with the Pacifica Now Conference. Apparently there's what I'm up here to ask is that the Pacifica Board really, really urge all of the general managers to require that there be more programming on this incredible transformation process. We hear virtually nothing about it on KPFA. I just found out last night that there's something called an alliance that is composed of Media Alliance, the Unitarians, Global Exchange, all these people. I'm very involved in the struggle, and I know nothing about it. It's about struggling to increase progressive agenda to media. And we need to open our airwaves more to discuss more about what would it really look like to have a national network that is really doing the work of the mission to change the world. So I can't tell you enough how important it is to make sure that that happens and how it's really not happening. Power at KPFA comes in a few ways. One is paid, one is unpaid staff. Another way is who has access to the airwaves. And right now, since we've won our station back, the listeners essentially have been cut out of the airwaves. It's unacceptable. It's not okay. And we are begging you now as a national board. They've had 5 months to deal with it. Nobody's done anything at KPFA virtually. And we're coming to you to ask you to do something about it. Thank you.
Okay. Sydney?
I have a couple of points. One is that the whole network, the station should make more use of your subscriber base. And all the people that are listening right now, you should get in contact with your stations and with your listener groups in your area. When we do fund drives at each station, if we could have, I know we're in a hurry to get all the money we can, that's the information we want to know is how much money you're going to give, but if you could just ask another question or two related to maybe what your employment is and how you can assist the station. One way that a few listeners in each area can assist the station is to start going out to community colleges, universities, county offices of education, school district offices, and individual schools, public libraries, and universities and libraries, and take around a sampler of the Pacifica Radio Archives material and talk to people about the existence of the archives and show them some of the stuff that's available. Give out the website. If we can get the schools and the libraries to hook into what's available and at the same time take a program grid so that they know what's on their local station right now, we can increase the audience vastly and we can increase the income, and that's basically it. But make more use of the listeners. And listeners, come on in and help concretely, and that's about it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, we have Mary Berg, then Jeff Struhl, and then Bill Mandel.
I'm Mary Berg. I'm a member of the unpaid staff at KPFA for quite a few years. I'm on the local advisory board, the program council, also the Coalition for a Democratic Pacifica, which started early in 99 and is still going, a listener group. And I hear a lot of people talking of openness, transparency, democracy, power sharing. I find that these nouns often degenerate into tokenism. And as an unpaid staff member, I was told for years that my input was wanted, had even occurred, and of course we were not part of the process, otherwise this whole fiasco would never have happened. Most of the principals were not part of it. And I'm very afraid that the same thing will happen again unless we do a lot of hard work developing a new power-sharing model, a real power-sharing model. Power from top down really isn't shared. It's just balkanized into little pieces. Everybody grabs a piece, and everybody wants power. If we had collaborative power-sharing, the kind of thing that happens when people are in an emergency, there's nobody giving any orders. Everybody just gets to and organizes and does what needs to be done. That model can be applied outside emergencies, and we need to really do that. And I urge this board to listen to a wonderful, vibrant suggestion such as Signe just made and such as others, and not become so preoccupied with, well, the finances, but we have to do the important things. And the important things are the things that really don't get shared. And somehow financial reports and solicitation of financial matters don't happen. It's the people on top begin to feel that they know better, and it's a very insidious path. And I'm really, now that we're embarking on a new era, I'm really making a plea to go deeper, go fundamentally, make a big shift, throw all those old clothes away and find new ones that include everybody. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
Hi, I'm Jeff Stroll. And there's a lot of business diversity, but one thing we need is diversity of opinion. I mean, I tune into the news, and daily I hear reports about our troops fighting the enemy in Afghanistan. And then I hear talk shows talking. They go as far as discussing, well, the government was negligent. More radical opinions are not heard, such as the ones expressed last night by Kelly Ramirez and Tracy Larkins. But it goes beyond that. There's the World Social Forum that took place in February, which was discussed a lot, but very little discussion about complaints by dissident labor people and landless peasants and the grassroots activists about the fact that the whole thing was dominated by George Soros, a billionaire financier who finances, in fact, many of the NGOs that pass for resistance these days. And there's very little talk about what's going down in Argentina, where people are forming mass assemblies and trying to get beyond this system. In other words, they're not just playing victims who are, you know, drowned in misery and need to be rescued by us. They're people who are capable of forming their own resistance and struggling for a post-capitalist, directly democratic world, just like we should be doing. I mean, if there was a spectrum of opinion on the stage, the Democrats and Republicans would be aware of on the right, and many of the, and some people have set themselves up as a couple of feet further to the left of the Democrats as gatekeepers and say, you won't go beyond that. Well, I think, I wonder if Lou Hill was alive today, if he would be allowed on KPFA, because after all, he considered himself an anarchist. And perhaps we need, as I said, a little more diversity. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Bill Mandel, Eric Bergman, and Rick Sterling after Bill.
Inasmuch as for the first time, I see representatives from KPFA whom I don't know, therefore don't know me.
Louder.
Simply
please
say
louder,
that.
Bill.
My name is Bill Mandel.
Louder.
Okay. My name is Bill Mandel. I broadcast on the station for 37 years. I broadcast on WBAI from before it was given to KPFA for about 20 years, and on KPFK from the day it went on the air for about 20 years. The interruptions were due, in every case, to political differences. For example, my removal from KPFA was because I insisted on upholding affirmative action on the morning show when the people then in charge wanted me to stick to the specific subject at which I happen to be a professional, Soviet and Russian affairs. I was thrilled. Two words. Number one, this board, I've been attending meetings for 45 years, is so much better than any I've ever attended before. It's remarkable.
Thank you.
And I say that's a word for democracy. Secondly, the second speaker from the KPFA Advisory Board. For the first time in all my years with the station, which is now 45, including years I bought the station, actually dealt with an issue having to do with working people, the shipyard. This is something new. Let us continue that. Lastly, someone spoke of the need to heal unhealed wounds. I would like to hear from the WBAI representatives when they speak about the difference, very important difference, between something they have done and KPFA has not done. One sentence. WBAI simply has returned to the air all the people dumped by the hijackers. KPFA has not. I would like to hear from both stations on that matter. Thank you.
I'm Eric.
Okay, we have a technical problem here. The mic has fallen apart. Okay.
Is okay?
Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
Okay, after Eric will be Rick.
Okay.
Good morning. I'm Eric Bergman. I helped raise funds for KPFA in the 80s and attended rallies in favor of KPFA in the late 90s. I'm here to thank KPFA and WBAI for running segments on Mumia Abu-Jamal. We have a booth. We have a table outside. I'm from the Labor Action Committee to Free Mumia Abu-Jamal, and I hope that you'll visit our table and support his freedom. Thanks.
His being.
Thank you. And then finally, Rick Sterling. Rick is not here? Okay.
We have a few more.
Huh? I'm sorry, Gail, did you?
A few more. Ray Meyer, Curtis Gray, and Steve Conley.
If those folks can do it in 1 minute, because we are way over time here, and this is only the first station. So 1 minute, okay?
Okay. Yes, my name is Ray Meyer. My questions are, first request, could Susan Da Silva enlarge on her comment about the station, KPFA, being in turmoil? Could she explain what the process was whereby $60,000 was taken by KPFA? You know, how was it done? Thank you.
I'd say that the station is still in turmoil because there are still so many wounds and so much distrust. And because so many people were lost in the purges, that the people who are left are often left doing too many jobs. And they have hardly time to look up from what they're doing and look around. As far as the money that was taken, my understanding is that, as has happened in the past, a call came from the national office to Eileen Carr or to Jim Bennett, and saying that money was needed to pay for payrolls elsewhere, and then we just send them the money. Jim Bennett and Eileen Carr do what needs to be done, which is just send the money. And I do not think that the supporters of KPFA actually begrudge the money. We want to help out where needed. We just think that there needs to be some notice, and that it needs to be a collaborative process.
Okay, Curtis.
Yes, my name is Steve Conley, and it's more of a general statement. I wanted to rise in support of the apprenticeship program, and I wanted to stress how important it is to institutionalize the concepts of the apprenticeship program throughout the Pacifica network. I basically got my training at KPFK in Los Angeles. I was known as one of the first graduates. This was a program that was brought down from KPFA by such luminaries as Tarabal Betsarai. And I wanted to stress the value that the program was designed upon, which was to bring in women and people of color specifically. And we graduated probably close to 100 to 150 graduates from the program. And these types of people allowed stations like KPFK and the network in general to be a lot more ambitious about the types of programming they were able to produce. The problem comes in the types of support that the Pacifica gives to these types of programs, and being consistent about making sure that they are institutionalized. And I think you ought to take very seriously how important it is to make this an important aspect throughout the network itself. And I think it's something you're going to have to think long and hard how to make it a permanent representation of that program. It's the only way that you're going to be able to keep these kinds of people in the system and move them through the ranks so that they represent a more diverse and well-trained cadre throughout the Pacifica network. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, finally, Curtis.
Hi, Curtis Gray from the KPFA lab. So I handed out to you folks, and I think many of you have already seen these were motions passed by the KPFA lab. One was something for recommendation for adoption by all of you folks, which is taking a strong public stance in favor of low-power FM and the indie media movement. It's just a general statement of support for that. And I think it'd be great to have Pacifica down on record as that. And I've given you the copy of that. In addition, with regard, you've heard many people talk about the need for programming, about the changes and what's going on in the settlement. I saw the on-air policy that Leslie had put out. I would say that it can't be unequivocal at all. We have to set a base or a threshold of a minimum amount of this programming. We have to make sure it's promoted properly so that the maximum audience hears it, so that we form at least some portion of our audience is familiar with what's going on inside Pacifica and its functioning, and from which we can draw new people into the board and the workings of Pacifica. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, I want to try and just figure out what the board's pleasure is here. Do people on the board have comments or questions that they want to raise now relevant to KPFA, or do we want to move to the other station? James? Yeah, James.
Sister Chair, I was a part of the November promulgation of the meeting that talked about the changes that would come about at Pacifica as it related to the elections. And we talked at that time about a KPFA model, election model.
Right.
And I haven't seen that model, and I'm kind of curious to find out if that model is available to us so we can look over it, because it's obviously something that we have talked about, and I think it was a part of the settlement, but I'm not sure if it was the sense of the settlement.
Could I answer that question?
Yeah, Carol.
Mm-hmm. Yes, James, it's actually posted now on the www.pacifica.org website. When you go to governance documents, all the previous bylaws of Pacifica are posted there, and the KPFA model, which is our starting point, is posted there. So, and if you have any trouble, you can email me and I'll send it to you.
Also, I believe that as the bylaws revision committees have been meeting around the country, that they have had, the opportunity to look at that also and discuss that, you know, too. So it is in the mix out there. Okay, you want to make a comment on KPFA?
This is a comment. This is Teresa Allen, and I would like to make a comment on KPFA. I remember at the meeting in New York that there were eyebrows raised about the fact that KPFA had this account that they had opened. And I heard the inside story, but many people didn't know that, if I understand it correctly, National had closed down your bank account. You have a crafts fair where you raise $40,000 or $50,000. You needed $8,000 in seed money. You appealed to National, and they wouldn't give you the money for the seed money. You got it yourself, so you could have this crafts fair to raise $40,000 or $50,000. Put it in the bank, raise the money, and then National came and took the money out of the account at the last minute again. I just want to applaud KPFA for, you know, your attempts at resourcefulness, at working around this national board previous administration that just thwarted you at every step of the way at doing what you need to do.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. Obviously, a number of the issues raised both by the manager's report, by the lab chair and co-chair, and by the community comment, are issues that we need to revisit in finances, in the bylaw discussion that we're going to have tomorrow, in a number of places. I think a lot of these issues will percolate up again. So. All right, thank you. So let's move along to KPFT, our Houston, Texas station. We're going to hear from Dwayne Bradley, who is the manager of the station, and then Deb Chapto, who is the lab chair. They're going to be over here on our left. Again, anybody who wants to sign up for a community comment for that section, just go see Gail, and she'll take your name. I'm sorry to say also, though, that for the other four stations, we need to do this agenda, run these part of the meeting much tighter. We gave KPFA a little more time because we are here in Berkeley, as we did in Los Angeles last time and in New York the time before. So we just want to ask everyone who's making presentations and comments to really try and just zero in on the most critical things that need to be shared right now. But Dwayne?
Okay. Thank you, Leslie, and I'm very happy to be here in Berkeley. It's been 14 years since I really felt that I was welcomed in this part of the Pacifica world. I just wanted to say that at the previous board meeting in Los Angeles, just a few months ago, I announced that we had some plans for an upcoming drive. KPFT has been out of sync with the other stations. We haven't done our second drive under this new management. We're starting it at dawn this coming Monday. So when we met in March, all the other stations had already finished their drives, and we had not at that point. And the drive following the Los Angeles PNB meeting was the most successful in KPFT's history. Nearly $300,000 in pledges, actually $390,000, nearly $400,000 in pledges came from over 3,600 listener sponsors. Over 1,600 of them were brand new members of KPFT. And that's, I think, wonderful. And wonderfully enough, as well, as of just last week, over 75% of that money had actually come into the station, so the fulfillment rate is very good as well. So because we had postponed our winter-thon, and it actually crossed from winter into spring, our spring drive is actually becoming the drive of the first week of summer. And it starts, as I said, this coming Monday morning. It runs through July 1st. It's only 8 days long. It's going to be as hot and as heavy as the heat and the humidity in Houston are at that time of year. And our goal is to raise $242,000 is our base level. We anticipate that if the bar having been raised by all the other stations, we're hoping that we will break 250, if not 300,000 on this. I know that's an optimistic goal, but the reasons for optimism right now, I think, are large, and so we're shooting for that. The staff at KPFT, we're in the process of expanding it. We're in the final stages of adding a permanent program director, a membership coordinator, an administrative assistant to our current salaried staff of just 6 people. We have received over 100 resumes for these 3 job positions. We're in the final process of going through, and I had hoped by this time to actually have a permanent program director hired, and we have not been able to do that. Circumstances in Houston recently have not allowed me the time necessary to pursue this task fully. So currently, as I said, we actually have 6 people working at the station now on a contract basis. 3 of them are in positions that are going to be filled through this job search, and 3 of them are just contract help doing key punch and data maintenance and things like that. The volunteer staff at the station in the last few months has expanded dramatically, and I'm very proud of that. When I came to KPFT again in February, the total volunteer staff, program producers and engineers and such, and people just doing general work around the station was about 70. And in the last couple of months, we've been able to train and bring in an enormous number of people from the community. There are now over 160 people working on actual on-air programming, board operations and production, and we're developing relationships with local universities to produce a local news half hour, beginning one evening a week, the second week of July. We've added 6 more people through that program will be joining our volunteer base in July. So we'll have nearly 170 volunteer staff, well over doubling it in just the last 3 months. The basic board operations training program, as well as a production training program, has been instituted. It's not well documented. It's still fairly rudimentary, somewhat ad hoc, but it's greatly expanded our staff, and I'm very thankful to the folks at the station who've done so much work on that. Particularly, one member of our local advisory board, Hep Ingham, and also the interim program director Otis McClay, who really have put a lot of time and energy into fulfilling some of the dreams we've had for KPFT. These new numbers are also reflected in the recent schedule change that we've just instituted at KPFT. The goal was to reconnect KPFT to the prodigal sons and daughters of Houston, the fired listeners of Black, Latino, and Asian heritage who had all been summarily banned and fired from the station 6 or 7 or 10 or 14 years ago. We, and I mean when I say we, not me, the entire staff at KPFT, the interim program director, Otis McClay, the lab chair, Deb Shafto, the members of the local advisory board, and all the volunteers who have actually come through this door that we've opened in Houston, have just helped to effect a program schedule change which put 30 brand new programs on the air in Houston. This happened just in the last 2 weeks. 28 of these are locally produced programs. 21 of them are public affairs, news, and cultural programs. 7 of them are music programs. It reflects as wide a range of interest and community involvement as you would expect from the fourth largest city in the United States. Mothering program, education issues, arts, spoken word, labor, feminist programs, news from the Houston Indy Media Center, Arab voices, Latino voices, Black voices, Native American voices. Some of these voices have not been heard in Houston for a decade or more, and it's one of the things I'm most proud of is to have been part of bringing the community back into its own community radio station. Music and culture, representing Tejanos, Blacks, South Asians, Southwest Asians, also have just recently returned to their airwaves of Houston. And many of these programs are falling into either weekday slots between 10 in the morning and 1 p.m. or between the hours of 8 and midnight on weekdays. Something else we've just recently instituted is rebroadcasting Democracy Now! A second time from 11 to midnight every weekday. And I have to say that Democracy Now! And also Flashpoints from Berkeley have been two of the most widely popular programs, eliciting some of the largest amount of listener support in the Houston area, and are in no small part the reason for the wildly successful fund drive we had in March, and are, I think, reasons why we will be successful in our drive starting on Monday. We've also added programs to maximize the fact that there's only 168 hours in a broadcast week. We've been doing things like assigning program slots where people will share an hour on alternating weeks, and they may share kind of an affinity group. We've also instituted some programs that are just once-a-month programs. There's a manager's report that I do that is on at least once a month for an hour or two. We have the local city council member that represents the area that KPFT is located in who comes in and does an open journal program during the lunch hour on the last Thursday of each month. We've preempted regular programming, not just for the ultra casts that Pacifica has put together, which we've been very proud to be part of, but also to do the, to my understanding, the only one of the five stations that's actually done a Pacifica Matters program on the air. You know, and we've always been kind of like the Southern Front, the little station that people forget when they're talking about programming and things in the world of Pacifica. That there's the East Coast, the West Coast, and oh yeah, there's that little station down there in the Central Time Zone, down there on the South Coast. We continue to experience problems being, I guess, in some respects, the baby of the family, although not the youngest member. We do have a lack of equipment. We do have shortages of space operating our radio station out of a 90-year-old house. We do have some problems with computer networking and fried voicemail systems and things like that. We do have problems with our budget due to, you know, a severe hit from a severance package to a former staff member at the radio station. We do look to expand our audience by having a repeater transmitter in Galveston on very soon, and I want to thank Don Mussel and John Krigler for working with us on that. We're also working on the goal of creating a second audio stream from our website, which we're going to essentially have it be a KPFTX, an internet station, something that we can allow people to come in and hone their skills and test fly new programs in a relatively safe way and essentially be a live training ground for all kinds of programming and another way that we can be a community resource. And finally, just to close, I wanted to reference back to last night when Leslie opened the program. She was talking about this issue of infighting and backbiting and things that were happening around the country. And Houston has played no small part in some of these matters. And I want to apologize for Leslie for having to make a trip to Houston in the near past. I hope you enjoyed your time there as much.
Oh, yeah.
I have to say this, that, you know, I think that there are some people who are maybe well-intentioned, but I honestly think that they're misguided, and I think that their energies are not being utilized well. I think it's counterproductive. I know that I've witnessed uncountable numbers of hours of good people's time being sucked into this energy vortex, and I honestly think that 99 and 44 one-hundredths of the listeners to any of the Pacifica stations know nothing nor really care to know anything and are not impacted by any of this, and I think it's best left to just dissipate itself that way, although I in the particular instance of Houston, I have been forced to seek out a mediator to try and bring differing parties in Houston together, though I personally am somewhat dubious of their ability to actually walk into the same place and be together at the same time, sort of an antimatter-matter situation. And finally, I want to acknowledge the national board, the national staff, the folks here on the interim national board for all of your assistance, your help, your good work, and your helping make our job, for the most part, an easier job, and being there when we need your help, and being able to tap into your resources. I want to thank the members of Houston's local advisory board and anyone who's listening who's volunteered or helped KPFT in any way. Bottom line is, I'm very optimistic. And I'm thankful to have this position most of the time, and I just think the bottom line is I'm very optimistic about Pacifica. I'm very happy to be a part of it, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Brian. Okay, Deb Shapto is the chair of the local advisory board.
Yes, good morning. I would like to say that in spite of the opinions you may have, if you only read what posts on the net, the Listeners Advisory Board in Houston is alive and well and thriving and doing a just tremendous job. We have had committees, and we have open to all comers. We have operated from the get-go on a basis of inclusion rather than exclusion. We have tried very hard and have succeeded in not asking anybody not to participate. And it hasn't always been easy, but I think that's the way we need to be going with it. And what's happened out of that is our committees have been just thriving, just doing amazing things. Our outreach committee started with about four white guys and white woman, and now is numbers about 15. Those to whom we have reached out are now part of those committees, and we expect a lot of pressure from these individual committees for more programming, and I think that's just exactly the way it should be. There are other committees, communities to whom we still need to reach out, and we have plans to do that. Our bylaws committee has been extraordinary. From a very contentious beginning, they have learned themselves how to get along with each other, how to operate with diverging opinions, and have really learned the value of diversity. And by diversity, they have learned, and I think we all have at the same time, we don't mean just different skin tones. We mean diversity in opinions about how the station should run, what it should be like, and who should be on the air. And that is a key if we're ever going to make Pacifica the station that we dream it will be. And our bylaws committee has actually worked its way through in a marathon session, I think it was 12 or 13 hours the other night, the entire list of questions that Carol had put up in the beginning. And I think we are the first to do so. I am immensely proud of our community. We have a finance committee that is looking into not only how to raise money, but the ethical considerations of some of the practices that have always gone on at the station and how to outreach to even more people. We have a technology or a production committee that has been training people. Our goal is to have just hundreds of people trained in the technology necessary to run the station so that we aren't dependent on any group or small cadre of people who will then, who will be prevented from exerting undue influence because of their abilities. Our membership committee is now, we stand at 21 members, and there is so much to be done. I would like to expand that to keep to our full 24. Even though we have a very little time left, there is so much work to be done. We are going to be seating new members to fill our capacity so that we'll have more hands to do the work. We had some advantages that other stations haven't had. We sort of had a clean slate when we moved in. We had some antagonism, some early ferocious antagonism from people who felt that the station was being taken away from them. And I'm very happy to see that some of our most productive community members on these committees have been people who were considered to be our enemies before. They have come in united with us when they began to see that we weren't about wresting power away from them to hoard it for ourselves, but rather to share it and to make this a genuine community station. They began to unite with us and have proved to be some of our most hardworking community members. I'm very pleased and would like to congratulate them also on being able to change their attitudes. The main problem that we face now, I believe, is this problem of those who think that only certain opinions should be allowed and that they are the guardians of those opinions and the designators of who should and should not be. And those are mostly the flamers that you read on the net, and it's a problem. I don't want to minimize it by any means, but I've also heard from the peace community, from the Palestinian community, from the Arab community, and from other communities that they suffer the same kind of schisms and divisions and power plays in their various communities. So while it's not unique to Pacifica, I think we have an opportunity here to find solutions, perhaps not only for ours, but for other communities that are struggling with these same issues. My main problem with it is that this flaming and personality discussion and the trying to eliminate people from the community has overridden and undermined the attempt to have any real serious political discussion of the real issues. When you are haggling about who can and cannot take part in the station's processes, you are not then talking about serious issues that I have heard in the Palestinian community being discussed, that I heard here at a diversity or affirmative action committee being discussed. And those are the issues that I would really love to hear both on and off the air in our own community. And they are being replaced by this sophomoric, sophomoric is giving it a boost up kind of discussions that are going on. And somehow it is our job, because I am not able to see at the time, at least, how we can put an end to these conversations. I think it's our job to see how that we can operate and maintain and restart these conversations that are critical in the face of this, over the top of it, around the side of it. And that's what I see as our next step. Toward that end, anything that the board, any listeners, anybody can contribute to methods, we're all ears. And that's about all I have to say. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
This is Teresa Allen, and I'm a member of the lab as well as the national board. I would like to say that we are hosting the next national board meeting September 20th through 22nd in Houston. We have a legal pad. It doesn't have too much space on it, but if there's, you know, if we run out of paper, come see me. I'd like to start it up here, pass it around. If you'd like to participate in any way, I'm sure, for example, what we did with Pacifica Now, we could do something similar to that in Houston. So if you are not from Houston but you would like to participate, please put your name, email, or phone on that. And also if you have any suggestions, perhaps from what you have experienced at this PNB meeting or from a previous one that you've attended, we would love to have your suggestions. Thank you.
Thanks. Okay, we have four people signed up for comment now. George Ryder, who's right up there, George. And then Michael Pimentel, Ken Freeland, and Reem, who's not from Houston but has something to say.
Reem's up top.
I don't know if that microphone is on.
It's not on?
Okay.
Yeah. Hello?
Right into it. Okay.
I'm a programmer and a member of the lab at KPFT. I want to speak to the peculiar nature of the vitriol that's been happening in Houston, I gather, throughout the rest of the country, and generally is someone many people think is characteristic of the left. I'm going to have to do a little of analysis about this. This is my analysis of it, but this is what I see happening. Seems to me we're born into this world as loving beings, expecting the people around us to be loving beings as well. If anybody's interacted with babies knows that. As you grow up in this oppressive society, you get hurt in various ways. You lose the sense of contact with loving beings around you. You become suspicious of them. You get kind of gnarly from the hurts that you experience as you're growing up. Now, some of those hurts are systematic. Classism, sexism, racism, adultism. And some of them come out of just ignorance. But they sort of, as you grow up into it, you reinforce the structure and maintain it. Those of us on the left who have somehow gotten ourselves out of that enough to see it have used our intellect, our ideological constructions, in order to free ourselves from those patterns of behavior, and we've come to depend upon those, so that when someone else has a different set of ideological constructions, which may not be very different, it seems like a threat to us. They seem like they're wrong. You can only be wrong within a context. You can't expect people to accept your context, your ideological constructions. That's a form of domination. We need to reach out to each other when that happens, instead of making the other person bad, which means you're free to do whatever you want to them, gossiping about them, which is one way of doing that, and the internet is a massive form of gossip at this point. There's a short poem that I heard some time ago that I'd like to share with you, just about a month ago, actually. It's a very old poem, which sort of captures what I have in mind. It goes like this. Fear drew a circle and kept them out, but love and I had the wit to win. We drew a circle and pulled them in.
I'm Michael Pimentel from the KPFT Local Advisory Board. With respect to what Deb was saying about the membership committee of the KPFT board appointing new members to the board, I wanted to say I think at this point in time this is an inappropriate a step for a board that has 20 members and given that there are only a few months from the elections in all the signal areas, and given that there appears to be substantial opposition throughout the network to the idea of appointed lab seats at all, I'd like to ask the board if they would consider either a resolution or a sense of the board or giving some explicit direction to the local boards, either stipulating or recommending, as the case may be, that local boards should refrain from adding any more members or lame duck members, except for those labs that might be under their required numbers under the policies of Pacifica, or those who might be having trouble meeting quorum. I'd like to ask the board to consider that and to address that issue. I think it's important. The KPFA elections model prohibits the local board, the stations, or Pacifica from endorsing candidates. I can't think of a more explicit endorsement than an appointment just a few months before an election.
Okay, thank you. Let's hear the other comments, and then we'll come back to the question, Ken.
Yeah, well, I wanted to speak about something else, but I would just like to rebut what was just said here, and I think that the local lab should be empowered to make its own decisions in those respects. Given that our lab is not elected in the first place, it hardly makes a difference, or not elected by the general listenership. I want to thank Leslie for her comments last night on the issue of the... Well, it's just called the verbal abuse that's been taking place electronically and in other ways, particularly in the KPFT area. In correspondence with other Pacifica activists around the country, I too have learned that this problem affects the entire network, but nowhere is it more endemic than KPFT in Houston. There's a small group there attempting to dictate station policy and programming decisions through the studious application of disinformation, innuendo, and outright slander against those who represent and promote genuinely progressive programming, who may be, this not only includes an endless stream of invective against syndicated Pacifica programmers who may be lifting the lid on stories buried by the mainstream press, but the same poisonous vitriol has been trained on able local programmers and progressive activists, leading to the departure of Professor Bob Bazanko, whose contribution to the progressive tenor of the new KPFT was pretty much without parallel. Aside from Leslie's helpful comments last night, I have found no resource within KPFT or Pacifica governance generally to help address this issue. Everyone seems anxious to weigh in on behalf of free speech, but very few wish to consider the implications of freedom from harassment. If the need is urgent for the IPNB to take this problem seriously by first of all endorsing a code of ethics that applies to all levels of the Pacifica community, such as that introduced by David Moore during our Pacifica Now conference and readily endorsed by the Bylaws Committee there, and that that some ability to appeal ethical violations, whether by staff or activists, be instituted by the governance arrangement that emerges from our shared discussions, and that all members of the Pacifica Foundation and employees be instructed in the norms of nonviolent communication and empowered to insist on them at every level of Pacifica's discourse.
Ken, I think your time is up.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Amrim Kakhuda, I'm not from Texas, but it is a national network, and also I was part of the people who went to Texas to help organize the community as we're trying to reclaim the network. And what I saw there, what I heard there, were the voices of Texas on the air, completely alien to the vibrant multicultural community that we met during our organizing after the board meeting and around it. We've heard from the general manager, we've heard from the lab, but one missing component, and actually from all the reports, is the program directors. I mean, these are the people whose vision and also the implementation of this vision is what Pacifica is on the air. So that's something that I would have loved to hear more of, Otis, Hardy, McClay, and others. And also another question to you all and to the managers of KPFT is when we have interim program directors versus looking at filling this position permanently, what are the accomplishments of these interim people? Because I know for sure Houston was very, very hostile programming environment, yet very fast it seems to be catching on to the Pacifica mission. It was one of the first and few stations that were willing to carry Black Voices for Peace, one of the most endangered anti-war organizations in the United States because of its own essence. So I would love to hear more about the accomplishments of Otis Hardy McLean on the air and how his accomplishments fan against a permanent position.
Hi, I'm Brian DeShazer, and for the listenership, I am the Pacifica Radio Archives Manager. And last night I was informed by this gentleman to my left, whose name escapes me, and confirmed by Deb Shafto and Dwayne Bradley, that during Garland Ganter, the ex-general manager of KPFT, during his exit, he took more than 30 years of programming of KPFT and threw it away. I find this egregious, downright criminal, and as we move into creating policy and procedure at the national level, the archives must be remembered that this should never happen again, and Mr. Ganter has virtually erased KPFT's history, and I find it downright criminal. Thank you.
Thank you.
Again, there were several issues that came up in the presentations and the comments, and I'd like to keep moving on to the other, unless any of the board members have any particular questions or comments, but come back to some of these questions about the labs and programming issues, things like that, come back to them in other points of the agenda. So, if that's okay, if we can move on to Washington, WPFW, Tony Augustus, our interim general manager there, and then followed by Sam Husseini, the lab chair, and then again, community comments.
You are listening to a live broadcast of the Interim Pacifica National Board meeting in Berkeley, California, being broadcast on KPFA in Berkeley, KPFB in Berkeley, KFCF in Fresno, WBAI in New York City, KPFK in Los Angeles, as well as on the web at radioforhouston.org, WBIX.org, KPFX.org, and the Independent Media Center of Washington, D.C. Now speaking is Tony Regusters, Interim General Manager of WPFW in Washington.
Powerful, progressive. This is WPFW, 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C. With this on-air mantra, setting the tone and demonstrating for listeners the mission of 21st century WPFW, the station is now well on its way to being transformed and restored to a broadcast entity that Pacifica can be proud of and which effectively serves the interests of the station's Washington, D.C. metropolitan area listening community. WPFW is positive because we work hard as peace and cultural warriors to uplift the spirits and intellect of our listeners. WPFW is powerful because we speak truth to power at 50,000 watts. WPFW is progressive because we provide common sense perspectives on the activities of the national government, its so-called war on terrorism, and promotes the hopes and desires of the worldwide human family for peace, justice, and equal rights. The management staff and on-air programmers of WPFW have worked hard and successfully with me over the last 5 months to upgrade the quality of our on-air product, reestablish good community relations, and restore hope in the hearts of many in the African-American, Latino, and local progressive communities who felt abandoned by the station due to actions taken or not taken by the station's previous management. The station and staff have regained a level of communication with the interim local advisory board, including unprecedented financial support from the lab for a very successful town hall meeting, as well as other fundraising efforts outside of the scheduled spring membership drive, Giant Steps 2. A lab member, Paul Mokiber, has donated the use of his home for a lab WPFW volunteer retreat day to allow the two groups, which have been estranged by past circumstances beyond their control, to effectively begin to bridge the communications gap. After 3 years, WPFW's website is back, a new, attractive platform with good speed that links to other Pacific stations, WBIX.org, and can be used to increase, and is being used, rather, to increase financial support for the station. In about 2 weeks, we will have the reintroduction of audio streaming of WPFW programming on our website.
Yes. URL.
Currently, the station is the site of three lab committee meetings related to the mandate to restructure Pacifica: the GM Search Committee, Bylaws Committee, and Elections Committee. With regard to programming, WPFW is the little engine that could. And we're presenting a feast of positive and powerful new progressive shows on 89.3's frequency. included in our mix of new programs are on Sunday a talk and issues-oriented program for teens in our area. It's called 2K Nation. And 2K Nation is proving to be a highly successful vehicle in the promotion of dialogue between youth and adults, something I'm very keen on. The program is hosted, produced, and engineered completely by teens under the supervision of WPFW staff